Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 126 of Unblocking Crypto. Al, as always, great to see you.
Good to see you, man. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, another interesting week. I think let's start off talking about the SEC. Because that's always fun to get the day started, right? The big news lately is the SEC has sued ConsenSys, which is the creator of the MetaMask wallet, pretty much coming out saying that all the swaps and the staking that they've done makes them a broker-dealer. And I mean, no big surprise that they are trying to do regulation by enforcement and not actually having conversations about what they need to do to become a broker dealer, all that good stuff. But it's kind of a mess right now. I think they also called out Lido and Rocket Pool as well, which are a couple of staking programs. But I mean, literally no one knows how to get accredited with what they want. So Lido and Rocket Pool are kind of just sitting there saying, well, what do we do? There's no rules to do this. And where do we go from here?
Yeah, we've talked about it a lot. Like the SEC seems to just start shooting holes in the wall and hope they hit something. And the Supreme Court just overturned the Chevron ruling. So I think that you'll start to see these three-letter acronym agencies have to play by some more rules, right? Because now the judicial branch will have a little more authority to kind of keep them in line when they overstep their bounds, because the legislation in Congress gives not enough guidance on how to enforce things or not enough definition on rules. And so it kind of tightens down the authority of the bureaucracies, and it kind of allows the judicial side to have a little more authority, which has been good for Bitcoin and crypto. It seems like the law seems to favor Bitcoin and crypto. So that's probably a good thing. I guess we'll always wait and see, because if judges get in there anti-Bitcoin and anti-crypto, then that would be a bad thing. But I am always down for less power in regulation or regulators. And I wouldn't mind seeing Congress pass some bills outside of omnibus gigantic $1.5 trillion bills, you know, 3 weeks after a government shutdown happens because they've ran the schedule too long. So, you know, the SEC seems to have no problem shooting holes in things and then taking losses and just burning through taxpayer money in litigation. And maybe this will start to slow things down. It seems like they could, you know, it's July now. Just glide through into the election and see if you have a job come January. You know, it's like, you're really going to start ramping things up here when you could just be a lame duck regulator. So I don't know. We'll see, man. It seems like the SEC is just speed bumps, you know, and they seem to lose, but they seem to slow things down.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I think like last month, there was a similar case with Coinbase and their wallet that the SEC had kind of come after them and the ruling was thrown out, right? So MetaMask, Coinbase wallet, they're non-custodial. So there's really nothing that they're doing other than matching different protocols up, and they're not really doing anything to that point. I mean, shoot, even last month, ConsenSys was the one who sued the SEC on the problems that they had with their regulation of Ethereum, right? So, and really not providing any insight into all of that. So it's been a mess lately. And even, I think Coinbase had even sued the SEC and the FDIC. This kind of goes back to the Freedom of Information Act issues, where there was a couple of, I think, tokens, and Ethereum was one of those, that there was just the SEC and the FDIC had kind of made some decisions on, and they weren't providing the information on how they made those decisions. And I think one was back from like 2018 on why the SEC decided to call it a security. So this happened a year ago. The SEC still won't provide the information, which they should based on the Freedom of Information Act. So Coinbase is kind of going after the SEC, I think, through a third party. But I mean, it's all a mess right now. Regulation is still a big question mark. I know we talked about it being a big theme for this year, but there's still not any clarity on it. And I think we're still a couple of years away before we get clarity on it, which is the sad part.
Yeah, I mean, it's like we've talked about for months now. Companies are going to keep going. You know, there's money to be made. There's demand that needs to be filled. And if there's not clarity on regulation, then they'll just deal with it on the back end. And then eventually laws get passed and things get cleared up because there's money to be made. So then there's lobbyists to pay. And then those lobbyists go talk to the lawmakers. And it just seems like the SEC is not playing ball. You know, we've seen some bipartisan stuff get through, you know, SAB 121 getting overturned by the House and Senate, and then vetoed by the president. So at some point, we have to pass some comprehensive crypto and Bitcoin legislation. And until we do, then we're just going to keep seeing this. I assume sometime next year would be the earliest chance we would have to get that passed. They're not going to do anything between now and November. So we'll see.
Yeah, it was interesting. So the IRS actually had an update. We had talked about them a few weeks ago and all the craziness they were doing with that new form. So they just announced that all the non-custodial industry participants will not be treated as broker-dealers in this latest form. And we were talking about how crazy that would be if that ever was the case. So good news is that's getting pushed. Whether that comes back up or not, shoot, it probably will at some point. The other interesting piece to all that, they said with NFTs, until you reach a $600 of profit per year, you don't have to do any reporting on NFTs. So that's kind of interesting. I wish they would just do that with crypto in general, like we've been talking about it. Shoot, even $400 at this point or something like that. And then I think starting in 2026, all of the brokers will be required to keep track of profit and loss for all their customers' tokens, which I feel like they kind of do that now, but I'm not sure why that wouldn't be the case or who's not doing that.
So they weren't doing that, back in the day, but I feel like I get like these 1099 miscellaneous or some 1099 stuff that I'm not, that I don't even realize from Coinbase and Kraken. It seems like they do it. Now they may not be required to do it by the IRS or legislation, but they may just do it because they know customers need it. And if they don't do it, if Kraken doesn't do it and Coinbase does, those that pay their taxes and do everything on the up and up are going to favor the company that issues them a form so they can kind of outsource the liability if they get it wrong. So yeah, I think it's probably just the government putting something in writing that is already happening in practice. So, good work, government. You come in a couple of years after everybody does it and then say everybody has to do it. Like, that's pretty much how it works, right?
I mean, maybe it's a more specific, because when I think back on Coinbase, I guess it's probably a bucket of my profit and loss on different coins, not each individual coin of one I bought. I still think most of these software tools out there today will do all that transaction data for you. And if you're keeping it all on Coinbase or one place, it's easy. But when you move it around different places, then it becomes extremely complicated. So without some sort of software or AI that's able to analyze all this, then it would be almost impossible to do.
I still use the same spreadsheet that I created in 2017 and has every transaction of every coin, and I can filter and sort. And every time I sell something, I have to go back and look at what I bought. And I'm like first in, first out accounting on that. So it's a headache. I definitely wouldn't expect the average person to be able to juggle all that. And, it's not easy. And now that it's a little bit more central, between Coinbase and Strike, those are pretty much the only places I buy anything. So it's not so tough for me, but I also only buy Bitcoin and never sell it. So it's getting easier and easier to do taxes. Like this alt season, if things shoot up and some of these old coins I have are worth more than, scratch, I might convert it into Bitcoin. And then if I have to pay gains or whatever, then fine. But yeah, you got to track the stuff and you start self-custodying and you buy it on Coinbase, you put it on your hardware wallet, and if you go to sell it, you put it in onto Strike and sell it. Like, that's going to be tricky. And so anyway, I think I've got to look and see what I got to do based on spending it in El Salvador. And then I assume that's going to be a taxable event, even though, you know, each transaction is under $600. You know, I track everything so I can figure it out, but it's a bit of a pain.
Well, for other people out there that don't want to track it on their own spreadsheet, there is a couple of companies that for about $100 a year will help you figure all that out using a software program. So I've definitely done that in the past, and it is super simple. The only hard part is downloading all the data to put in there. And if it's just coming from one account, like a Coinbase, then it's simple. When it's coming from a handful of different wallets and exchanges, and it's a bunch of different tokens, then it, of course, some red flags pop up and they say, tell us where this is coming from and how all this kind of connects to each other. And yeah, so there is an easier way to do it. It's just, it does cost money. So the other thing I think that was interesting, we're talking about regulation. So Europe just started yesterday with their MiCA regulation for stablecoins. So it is still the beginning, right? It's at least it's a start though, right? We'll see how it all goes. Right now, they're light years ahead of, I feel like, everybody else in terms of regulation, at least from one of the leading countries out there.
Yep.
So hopefully we'll hear some good things, but time will tell.
No, I feel like Europe is in the, you know, in the pole position right now as things really get started. You know, you've got developed countries with infrastructure, and you know, it's not the most friendly place to do business. I mean, every August you lose 100% of your manpower for 4 weeks. So that might be a little tricky, but yeah, I mean, if you had to pick a country or a continent that has outlined rules, or one that you think will be friendly in the future, it's kind of tough to guess and build a company in a country that may or may not be friendly to your industry by the time you get your company big enough for it to matter. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of money to be made for countries that are early to this, and Europe seems to be happy to be early to it.
Yeah. And I think we just had our first debate for the presidential nominees last week, and there was a lot of hope that crypto would come up and we'd get to hear some thoughts, just because Trump's been very positive pro crypto. Biden has not been, but maybe coming around. What was interesting is there apparently debate was a complete mess for other reasons, but after the election, Polymarket kind of went crazy. So Trump is now on Polymarket polling at 67%, and Biden is down to about 22%. So that apparently was not good for Biden. I mean, I think there's been a lot of people talking about, is he going to step down and all that kind of stuff. But during all that, the Kraken CEO came out and said he's now donating $1 million to Trump as well. Not CEO, co-founder, but he's doing it all in ETH. So there's more major players in the crypto space that are backing the Republican side because they view them as a much more pro-crypto regime.
Yeah, so I watched the whole debate. I like watching debates. I feel like it's almost like a long-form podcast where you get to actually listen to people talk. And they set it up so that, like, they muted the microphone of the person who wasn't supposed to be talking. So they actually, you could actually hear them talk. And so I was like, I like watching debates anyway, but this one I'm like waiting for them to talk about Bitcoin and curious to see if Biden could hold it together. I mean, it started at 9 p.m. Eastern. You know, that's pretty late for somebody who's pushing 80 years old. And they didn't talk about Bitcoin and really didn't even talk about much about technology or a lot about AI. I mean, it was pretty old school immigration and then yelling at each other and calling each other names. But this was the first time I was expecting for them to talk about Bitcoin and they didn't. I think that there may be another debate. They may change out Biden at the convention. Either way, I think it's one of those things when you listen to, when you're in your silo and you're only hearing the stuff that the algorithm tells you, you know, maybe it's not that big of a deal on the Trump side. and you're hearing, you know, what you want to hear. But if you're into crypto, I mean, Biden, he doesn't have enough time to turn it around. He's been very unfriendly to it for 3.5 years. He doesn't have the runway to land this thing and take off in another direction. So I think no matter what, that's going to be a point for the red team. And I think you mentioned it before, the Winklevoss twins donated $1 million each, and they had to get refunded because they over donated beyond their, you know, the legally allotted amount of 800 and whatever $1,000. So yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot of people, and the more people that talk about it, the more people, because quite frankly, if you're even thinking about being on the red team at this point, you almost have to whisper it. So to have a public donation go into the Trump side, and now this will be the third big one that we've heard, and I'm sure there's more. That's a big difference than, you know, whispering that you may be on the red team. And especially, I mean, there's going to be California guys that are talking this way. So we'll see what happens. I think either way, I think that things get more favorable for Bitcoin and crypto, though.
Yeah, I mean, from a Biden perspective, I agree. They're kind of running out of time. They did make an announcement that the White House is going to rehire a cybersecurity expert. I think Carol House is her name, that she was part of the group that did that 2020 crypto outlook for the White House, right? And yeah. And she is theoretically pro-crypto. I mean, I guess compared to everybody else in the White House, that doesn't really take much, right? But I mean, that is definitely a positive. So we'll kind of see what happens with that. But I mean, it's still kind of too early to tell.
Yeah, I mean, also, there's just too much of a book against the Biden White House on crypto and Bitcoin. You know, you can hire somebody, and but you're not going to change your actions. Like, all they're going to be able to do is talk. They're not going to be able to actually do anything between now and November. So it's all just going to be word salad nonsense. I'm not buying it. So
yeah, I think she was actually on a recent podcast or something where she called out the SEC for their lack of regulatory clarity. So I mean, that's a big deal for someone in the White House to be able to be saying that about a nominee that they chose as well, right? So,
yeah, I mean, and if Elizabeth Warren really is pulling the strings on Gary Gensler, then the blue team can call off the dogs on the Elizabeth Warren team. So they don't seem to do that, and that would be the action that matters more than what they say. So we'll see. Again, until they would have to do a lot of favorable things for crypto and Bitcoin instead of just talking about them, and they just don't have time to do that.
Well, there's supposed to be another meeting coming up in the next week or two at the White House that is all crypto focused, and I think that was the one that Mark Cuban was going to go to. So I'm sure in a few weeks we'll hear something out of it. We probably won't hear much because they probably won't share much, but at least the goal of it being a bigger conversation, I think, is all we can ask for at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it'll still be nice for leadership on the blue team to start to loosen up on crypto and Bitcoin for future purposes. You know, I mean, if they're going to pass legislation, it's probably going to need to be some kind of bipartisan legislation. So if they start to loosen up at the top, then that'll work its way down.
Well, let's talk about some of the ETF news. So there's a bunch of stuff going on there. I mean, might as well start out with the U.S. Bitcoin ETFs. The past week has not been pretty. There's probably a little over $1.1 billion in outflows that have happened. Although I guess maybe good news is BlackRock was just over positive, so they weren't negative as well. So it's not just it's not the entire market is going down. I mean, the market as a whole is definitely going down, but there are still people that see benefits to that. So a lot of reasons for that. We've talked about that over the past couple of weeks, hoping that that is starting to somewhat change. But then we're also starting to hear that the Ethereum ETFs could start trading as early as next week. So, I mean, that's a big deal if that's really going to happen. I'm always skeptical, but I would love for it to happen sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I mean, the Ethereum ETF, I think, just from just skiing in Bitcoin's wake here makes it easy for the Ethereum ETFs. You've got primarily retail and small institutions are the only people that have gotten into the Bitcoin spot ETFs. So if you just keep riding these coattails as they explain Bitcoin to larger institutions, maybe they catch 5-10%, you know, like a 90-10 split or something like that. But Ethereum's market cap's close to a third of what Bitcoin's is right now. So every dollar they get's worth the impact of three for Bitcoin. So it could be a real mover for Ethereum. I also saw that Van Eck filed for a Solana ETF. And so surprise, once Bitcoin spot ETF gets in, and then Ethereum, and then Solana, and they're just going to go down the list. And, you know, I don't know how long it'll take. I get, what was it, 120 days or 90 days? And then they can extend and extend. But, you know, at least the starting line has happened for a Solana ETF. And if Solana can ski in Ethereum's wake, just like Ethereum's right behind Bitcoin. So we'll see.
21 shares filed the day after Van Eck too. So now there's two guys that have filed for the Solana ETFs. And I think they took a lot of people by surprise. Ethereum has 10 spot ETFs that are theoretically about to be approved. Now you have two Solana ones in the hopper. And it wouldn't surprise me if a lot of other people kind of follow that and that lead and try to jump in there too. I mean, Solana right now is probably the third largest guy in terms of activity behind Bitcoin and Ethereum. So it makes sense. The scary part is after that, it goes to like Shiba Inu.
Right. Doge.
Yeah. So that is a little worrisome if we keep going down the path that they're going with the amount of activity, because that's not the one that you want. But what is interesting, Coinbase, their derivatives group, is they just announced they're going to be the first UX exchange to let some of the futures for SHIB, Link, AVAX, Stellar, and DOT happen. So, I mean, that's exciting that the U.S. is allowing this, right? I mean, it's kind of one of those ways they're getting to the point. Futures, for some reason, are coming before actual spot on all this stuff, but at least we're going in the right direction with a lot of this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a Bitcoin guy, and the more altcoins get into Bitcoin's market, then, you know, less stuff flows into Bitcoin and the less understanding of Bitcoin. I like Bitcoin in this world of institutional money, because it's Bitcoin's narrative is very easy. You know, digital gold, it's trying to be digital money and private money and easy to understand. And then you go to Ethereum and it's, you know, an infrastructure and a platform and a kind of a more difficult thing to explain. And Solana feels like an also ran that's just cheaper, faster kind of thing. But I mean, once the money starts flowing around, I mean, it's like private equity money. Like, you don't have to have a great idea for a company to get to find some private equity group that's willing to give you money. And it's the same thing with this. It's like, all right, well, we got $500 million. Tough to put $500 million of it into Bitcoin. So let's go 450 and 40 and 10, you know, in Ethereum and Solana or something like that. So I think they'll catch some money falling out. But, you know, I don't think it's going to make a tremendous difference in the grand scheme of things. But good for those individual tokens, you know, and it's probably good for their price overall. But we'll see where it goes.
Well, speaking of Solana, one of the other interesting things that happened, so Twitter, or X, I should say, aka Twitter, you can now buy Solana tokens directly through Twitter, which is kind of a big deal, right? I mean, that's crazy that's happening. And then even what they've talked about, so Stripe, which is one of the major players in the payments processing space, they were in Bitcoin back in like 2014. They have just announced they're going to put USDC or enable USDC on Base, and which is Coinbase's layer two. So now you should be able to go from fiat to crypto on Stripe to the Base network, which is a big deal, right?
I mean, you know me, I'm not going to pay a whole lot of attention to it, but unless it sounds like a straight up bad idea, like scanning people's irises and linking their identity to the blockchain, it's tough for me to be just against things in principle because they're not Bitcoin. So, you know, you got to try stuff out.
Well, so speaking of WorldCoin, I don't know if you heard, but they are going to be moving or allowing WorldCoin to be also on the Solana network here pretty soon. So there's been some money thrown up to make that happen. The other, I guess, more interesting piece to me is that the competitor to Solana is announcing that they have a solution. And I think they call it like Rarimi, R-A-R-I-M-E. So we talked, a month or so ago, or maybe longer than that, about in Russia when Putin had this landslide victory that maybe the elections were not real. And there was a company that was scanning your passport and using zero knowledge technology to allow you to kind of dissent on that without anybody knowing who you are. And what they've done is they are allowing the rest of the world to do this, right? To pretty much create a passport that you can use anywhere in the world. So exciting to see. We'll see what really happens with it. Where it goes from here is kind of to be determined.
I mean, voting seems to be one of the blockchain use cases that keeps popping up, but I just feel like the product market fit isn't there. You know, you're talking about governments that are still using, I mean, you know, in my lifetime, they went to like what I would say is maybe 30% digital. Like it's still like chip technology and paper, and then the paper gets shredded, and you know, it's like for them to jump all the way to blockchain and skip, you know, it's not like you can vote on your phone, or you know, they have no mobile technology integrated into voting. So, and there's always weird things about having to present your identification to vote and things like that. So for them to find a way to use blockchain for voting and to convince states or at the federal level that that's going to be a good thing in the United States, that seems like a stretch. But it would be nice to just have a little bit more confidence that elections are not tampered with, especially since the last few have come down to like, you know, under 60,000 votes in the last two elections. Yeah. So I wouldn't mind a little bit of a verification on voting.
Well, I mean, I think that's the plan, is it uses an app and a passport really to verify everything, right? So theoretically you could vote almost directly from your phone, which is, I think they want to try to compete with the WorldCoins of the world and get away from scanning your iris and use your passport. I mean, the problem with voting, right, is now is you don't need a passport to vote. So you just need, actually, I don't even know what you need at this point, because it doesn't seem like anybody is similar in every state. They all have different requirements. Yeah.
We'll see. I mean, it's not happening this election.
Yeah, and exactly.
It seems like changing voting rules, it's going to be difficult. But yeah, I mean, it does make sense, but the people in charge are not inclined to make changes.
So we've talked about Bitcoin mining, and there's probably going to be a lot of changes, especially after that happening. And another big announcement that we heard is CleanSpark, which I think they're actually based in Georgia. They have just put out they're going to acquire Grid, G-R-I-I-D, for about $155 million. So it gives them access to, I think, 20 megawatts right now in Tennessee, but with a growth plan to get 400 megawatts of power, which is kind of a big deal, right? So that's exciting to see that there is some change going on with the miners, and it's continuing to be good miners that are taking care of moving things forward.
Yeah, I listened to a podcast or a Spaces. There's a guy named Mike Alfred who is kind of an investor in Bitcoin mining. And, you know, he's doing the research like a hedge fund or whatever, and there's some poorly run miners out there, and there's some well-run miners out there, and the halving is going to put the poorly run miners in a position to be acquired by the well-run miners. So I think that this acquisition is probably something like that, because you know you were months past the halving. So if you're not efficient, if you don't have good operation and power pricing, you're in trouble. But you do have assets, you know, you have mining rigs that someone may want that does have cheap power and runs, you know, at an operational efficiency that makes them profitable at $60,000. So I think you'll see quite a bit of this acquisition stuff.
Yeah. Some other good news too. So Strike, we talked about them a little earlier, but they just launched in the UK. So they're now over 100 countries around the world that they are active in. So amazing to me that the UK took this long, to be honest with you, that they are near the 100 level and not near the top 10 level, but it is what it is. And I guess the good news is it just, the list keeps growing on companies or countries that you can use Strike in.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I like Strike. Strike's the Lightning wallet I used when I was in El Salvador to buy stuff. Mm-hmm. It's where I've been buying Bitcoin lately in this little dip. You know, we've been in this $60,000 to $70,000 range. So anytime it's kind of close to 60 and I've got some cash, like I sold a rental property. And so I have some cash and like, it's weird to buy Bitcoin. I don't know what else I want to buy. I mean, everything else is through the roof. Like S&P 500 is at an all time high and I don't believe that it's a very healthy purchase thing to invest in, and real estate's kind of in a weird spot. So Bitcoin's pretty good. And so I use Strike to buy that, and I use Strike to buy to spend Bitcoin in El Salvador. The only thing that I don't like is you can't hide your balance on Strike. So if you have the app open, people can see how much you have. So you're kind of forced to move your Bitcoin off of the app and just have spending money on your phone, which is fine. But I still, even if I have $800 worth of Bitcoin, if I'm buying, you know, $12 worth of lunch, I don't really want the guy seeing that I've got $800 on me. You know, that's kind of a weird piece. But other than that, I mean, it works well. The fees aren't bad. I haven't had any issues with it. And I like Jack Mallers. So, you know, it kind of works out.
Yeah, I think the only other problem is if you have more than a few thousand dollars of Bitcoin on that wallet, it takes a couple of weeks to get it all off. They have limits on how much you can get rid of or transfer every week, right? So not that you ever want to keep it on a soft wallet. And when you're transferring it to your hard wallet, just make sure that you're only going to be able to do like $4,000 or $5,000 a week.
Oh, I feel like I moved quite a bit more than that in one go before I went to El Salvador. So maybe they changed the limits. I know they changed the limits because my daily limit to purchase Bitcoin is $50,000 now, whereas before it was way lower than that. So they may have just kind of cleared some things and increased the limits because I moved quite a bit. I don't recall how much, but I couldn't hide my balance and I didn't want to carry around, you know, 5 figures worth of Bitcoin around and yep. to buy like $100 worth of dinner. So yeah, I think we'll double check that on Strike. I think that they've changed their limit.
No, that'd be good. Update on Nigeria. So not so much on who they're holding captive, although they have announced that they are giving all the crypto companies in Nigeria 30 days to re-register for the new cryptocurrency regime that's going on there. So, which I'm not sure why you're re-registering. If you have them all registered, then you have them all registered. Why are you forcing them to do it again? But it is what it is. They've come out and said they view their crypto industry as a $400 million industry just inside of Nigeria. And that there's about 32 million Nigerians that own crypto today or are using their services. And I think that's about 33% of their entire population, which is a pretty large population compared to the rest of the countries out there, right? So you have one of the countries that is ahead of everybody else that is struggling when it comes to regulation. And with what they're doing with this latest Binance debacle is I think they're scaring people from ever wanting to be involved in anything in Nigeria.
Yeah, Nigeria seems like they're in a battle with themselves. You know, their currency's falling apart. They're kind of trying to play defense against that, which means they're kind of tightening up on crypto. But it's like they've got one foot in and one foot out. If they just said, you know what, let's bail on our currency and or run parallel currencies and allow private stuff and private currency to be used as legal tender, like El Salvador. I mean, there's a lot of things they could do. But I just feel like they're, you know, they're clinging to the old system and that puts them into a fighting mode to kind of play defense against crypto. So Maybe it takes new leadership to kind of usher in some innovation there.
Well, I think this is new leadership that everybody has a problem with. So I don't know when the next new leadership has an opportunity to get there, but it could take some time now at this point. And then, so the other really interesting news that I saw was Sony, which is like $100+ billion Japanese company, is about to create their own crypto exchange, which to me is a huge deal to see something like that. I think they're going to call it S.Blocks or something like that. They acquired it from Amber Japan back in the day. They're also going to be building their own public blockchain, which is kind of cool. And then they had a patent last year that they filed for that allows them to have a more flexible use of NFTs as in-game assets. And I think they called them super fungible tokens. So I'm intrigued to see kind of what happens. And I mean, they own PlayStation, right? So if all of a sudden they start to use this on PlayStations around the world and they have their own blockchain and an exchange, like this could turn into a very interesting business for them.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about gaming and how, you know, somebody's going to figure out how to have in-game currency that is, could also be out of game value. You know, Sony certainly fits that kind of bill, and they're not afraid to innovate and do new things. I mean, when I was young, you know, Sony was one of the Japanese companies where, and I was in public school learning how to count to 10 in Japanese because it looked like Japanese companies were going to take over. And then Japan hit a crazy economic stagflation for 30 years. But, you know, Sony's always, I mean, their TVs were awesome when they had that. They created the Walkman. You know, that was innovative as it gets. So, you know, if they still have that same kind of cultural mindset of, you know, first to market and kind of stand out there and take risks, let them do it. Because, I mean, like, my kid is 11, and if they have crypto in Sony PlayStation games, you know, he'll understand that you can turn it into and out of US dollars and into other currencies. And you know, right now it's you buy in-game currency and it's then you spend it on a new outfit for a character and then the money's gone. If you're in-game currency and then transfer it onto an exchange and turn it into Bitcoin, my kid would be all about it.
Well, I think we talked a little bit about it in the past too, that Japan is one of those that's on the short list that if they really want to jump into the limelight, one of the things that they should do is pretty much, I mean, they have a huge debt to GDP. And one of the ways that they could somewhat fix that is starting to just print money and buy Bitcoin and be that first big country into it that will almost skyrocket their standing from lower level tier one company to one of the top in the world, right? So there's still a possibility that happens, but this is still just interesting to see Sony do something like this as a precursor maybe to that.
Yeah, in related news, this week the yen slipped again over 160 yen to the dollar, and they're stepping in again, and it actually impacted the U.S. 10-year treasury rates. They bumped up like 7 basis points in an hour. It might have been yesterday, the day before, because I was looking at, I bought some TLT, like 20-year bond stuff, and it dropped like 2% in one day. I'm like, holy crap, that's a big move for a 20-year bond fund. And so I was looking into it, and Japan's starting to rock the boat with their inability to control their currency. So if you're in Japan and you got your head on straight, you're looking for something other than you're looking to get out of the yen and into something that'll either appreciate or at least, you know, conserve your purchasing power.
Well, cool. What else did we miss?
Mt. Gox has about $9 billion worth of crypto that as they're scaring people into thinking it's going to get dumped onto the market, which I think if you're Bitcoin Cash, I think you're right. I think the people that get Bitcoin Cash are going to dump it. But for Bitcoin, I mean, yeah, you might sell some of it just because you've had to watch it for 10 years and not have it in your hands. But I think if at this point, I mean, you've force hodled for a decade, I don't think you're going to cash it out and suddenly be in love with US dollars. But I think it does kind of keep the price down. I think it's kind of a market sentiment issue.
Well, we talked about this, I feel like, a lot over the past year or so, because it seems to be a common theme that keeps happening. The difference here with Mt. Gox is they're planning to pay people back in Bitcoin, right? Whereas FTX decided to do it in cash because they don't have the crypto, right? And even though FTX is telling people you're getting 118% back, that's based on pricing that was back when
at the bottom.
Yeah, when Bitcoin was at, what, 18K or 20K, whatever it was, right? So people are still taking a huge haircut with the FTX stuff. With Mt. Gox, I mean, they're theoretically taking a haircut, but they're actually getting Bitcoin back. So they don't, I don't know. I think at this point, they've had it for 10 years. I don't think they're cashing out now, right before the true bull market kind of starts for the next year and a half.
Yeah, and I mean, if you were into Bitcoin in the Mt. Gox days, you've been paying attention, you know, like you get it. And you probably had, I mean, if you had Bitcoin outside of Mt. Gox and sold it in 2016 or 17 or whatever and regret it, you're probably going to get that Bitcoin back. You're like, okay, this is my long-term stash, you know? So yeah. I think that that's just kind of a thing that looms over the price, but I don't think it's actually going to impact it a lot. We talked about Bitcoin miners. Marathon came out and said that they've mined $15 million in Caspa, which I've never heard of Caspa, but it seems like an altcoin. And I guess it's a proof of work, small cap altcoin that they said they're using it to diversify in addition to their Bitcoin mining, which seems like a weird thing to do, but I don't really know what to think of that. But you know, you've got some conversations about Bitcoin miners using ASICs for AI purposes now that you've got this Caspa mining thing. So I don't get it. I feel like if you're a Bitcoin miner, you need to just be focused on being really, really good at Bitcoin mining, because there's a lot of competitors out there, and the better you do 5 years from now, you know, you might, whatever extra Bitcoin you can hold on to may be worth 10 times what it's worth now. So, you know, $15 million in Caspa could be $150 million worth of Bitcoin in 2030. You know what I'm saying? So it seems like a weird move. Marathon's kind of a weird company. Like, they seem like they always have something else going on. Like they seem like they're, you know, the entrepreneurs that have like one really good business, but they're always trying to start a second weird business, and the second one keeps failing. Like, that's what Marathon feels like to me. It's like the guy that, if he just focused on the one business that's successful, he'd be really good at it. He just can't do it. He's constantly distracted by something new. I feel like that's Marathon.
Yeah. So I have not heard much about Caspa, but they've gone up 4x in the past year. Interesting.
Better than a lot of this altcoins. I mean, it's not like, you know, we're in some heyday for altcoins right now.
Actually, more like 7x in the past year. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. Never heard of it until now, but interesting.
I heard that 500,000 new tokens were created on the Solana network in the last month, which is crazy. Yes. So, you know, that kind of indicates if you're not in the top maybe 20, you're toast. Like the meme coin, it's tough to stand out as a meme coin when there's 500,000 being created in a month. So we'll see what happens there. But then back to the real world, Julian Assange was set free and couldn't get on a commercial flight for legal reasons. I guess they would have arrested him or something. And so he had to spend $500,000 on a private flight that I think one single donor provided $500,000 in Bitcoin for him. And there's speculation that it was Jack Dorsey that did it. So, you know, it's just kind of fun to watch that high level stuff happen. You know, I mean, it's got to be 10 years since he's been in jail, right? So, you know, and you got guys like Jack Dorsey who I listen to in different Bitcoin podcasts or different conventions and speeches and stuff. And I don't know, man, whenever there's something political that is actually interesting to me and not just frustrating, it's like I actually want to read about it. So we'll see what happens there. But again, you know, it's pretty nice. You can just zip $500,000 worth of value to somebody in a couple of minutes. Can't really do that elsewhere.
No, that is true, especially since most of his access to dollars was frozen a long time ago. So,
yep. Yeah. So it's just, put it on the list of like cool things Bitcoin can do that you can't do with anybody else. Like there's no bank. They couldn't freeze that transaction. They can't reverse that transaction. It's done. So bearer assets are neat.
That they are.
So yeah. That's my list. That's a wrap awesome. For me.
Yeah. Well, as always lately, another action packed week full of a lot of interesting things. And hopefully next week will continue to be mainly positive.
July is usually a pretty good month, and then August is dead, but we'll see what goes on, man. I'm Bitcoin doesn't get boring. Like, I'm not the entrepreneur that's always starting a second company when the first one's doing well, and just, I can focus on things, but I do tend to kind of get boring, and Bitcoin hasn't. I'm coming up on my 7th year anniversary of, actually digging into Bitcoin. I don't have a lot of 7-year anniversaries for paying attention to different topics. I mean, like, I don't listen to real estate podcasts or read real estate newsletters or anything like that. I mean, I have, I have more real estate than Bitcoin, but I listen to 100 times more Bitcoin stuff than real estate stuff. It's just more interesting than anything else out there right now.
Yeah, no, I don't see that changing anytime soon. And I think even with the Mt. Gox stuff, there's still probably a lot more that'll happen in the second half of this year with finally all these institutions will start turning on. And most of the stuff lately has been retail. And we have really yet to see the institutions get in. So hoping that changes here before the election. And who knows what happens after the election at this point.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting close. Seem to remember a couple companies talking about August to cut things loose, like some even the wirehouses, Wells Fargo and Bank of America. So yeah, I mean August, September, October could be. I mean, October seems to be the month when things take off, right? Like it's it's always been October, and it's like the perfect storm setting for October this time too. So we'll see what happens when we get there.
Well, what does it typically sell in May and then come back in October ish, right? So. That this seems to be lining up perfectly for that right now.
That's right. October.
Awesome.
So we'll see. Cool.
Yeah, as always, great chatting. We'll talk again next week.
Sounds good, man. See you.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.